Imagine you've all heard that old story about the preacher maybe at an early morning service and only a farmer came to the service. How many have heard it? You've heard it, yeah. And there's only one person shows up, it's a farmer. And the minister kind of, anyway, he goes through the whole service. And then at the end of the service, the farmer says, when the cows come in from the field, and if there's only one, I don't dump the whole load on them. So this morning, I don't think we necessarily have to dump the whole load on you. I put the chart up here. I think these are some of the things that we've been over in case, we have need to refer to them. And this one on awareness, self-awareness, there's several exercises and place where I'd like to start is the awareness of pronouns and words in our communication. Because those are our tip-offs to when we are getting into conflictual, dysfunctional communication. And with what we were sharing last night around these positions, blamer, pleaser, distractor, and super-rational, for instance, the blamer, the arguer, uses the pronoun you a lot. Why'd you do that? Or you shouldn't have done that. Or you make me sick. You make me mad. So you're shifting the responsibility onto the other person. And whereas if you use an I message, I am feeling angry with what's happening. There's a different message. The other, the you message accuses, and it puts the other person on the defensive. And you are making the other person responsible for how you feel. And of course, naturally, they're gonna respond in kind, and they'll come back with a you message. Oh, well, look what you did, So the argument goes back and forth. So it's important to be aware of the words or the pronouns in particular. So this doesn't mean that the pronoun you is always used bad. There's a place for a good usage of the pronoun you. And same way with the pronoun we. So pay attention, though, when you're in a dialogue with somebody or even a small group and you begin to use the we message, whether you're using it in a supportive, constructive way, or whether you are putting the whole group down, or putting the two of you down if it's a conversation, because that's the we is used to generalize. So if a couple were arguing, one member might say, we always argue. We never get anything solved. We always end up, so that's, it's accusatory and it makes both persons wrong. I blame myself and I blame the other person, see. And of course, that is why it puts down the self and it puts down the other.
Another use of we is, people have to be careful. It sort of depends on the individual, but lots of times a person will use we when it's their responsibility, but they say we and they it depends.
Yeah, right.
Maybe they're transferring it off to a group because it's a team and that's proper, but maybe they're transferring we when it really should be, be we.
Own part of, own whatever is there.
We're really in trouble. Well, isn't we that is really in trouble?
There may be places where you know, a group has made a decision or had some, and one might bring up, well, we made a decision last month to do such and such. Well, now that's kind of an objective statement about what this group did. Now we're, and then you know, I go on to say, now we're faced, I think, with a different situation. And we've got to take a look at this. So there's a use of we that's inviting the group to take a new look. And then, you know, I might turn to, well, now, Joe, what do you think what we ought to do? Or so on, and people start discussing it.
But I think what you're saying is a little different. You're saying, you're saying we to make it look like the whole group agrees when really you're the one that has
well,
the opinion.
The typical situation, if you're in a work situation, I happen to be in private industry, the typical situation is if a manager or a supervisor or whatever capacity you're in, if you're in your leadership capacity, the proper way to get things done is in a team effort, involve your team to start with, and let them know it's we right from the beginning, and you participate, you're listening to them, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of times you get a situation, or the company itself, through a manager, depending on how they go about it, they won't involve, they do not involve people from the start. You get a work situation where the people are really responsible for getting the job done and carrying out at the lower level are not asked to be involved to start.
Uh-huh.
They're not asked to buy into the situation. And it all comes down, and all of a sudden it's we, but they've never bought into it.
Yeah.
You're trying to accomplish something with the supervisor of the company saying, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the troops are sitting down there saying, what is this we business? Nobody ever asked us.
And then you get a lot of resistance because they haven't
well, been, it doesn't work.
They haven't know? Been surprised at what the plan has been. Mm-hmm. That's why it probably works well in volunteers here, because there are frequent staff meetings where everyone gets to say something. Their input is respected,
mm-hmm.
and seems to work amazingly well mm-hmm. for such a diverse group of people that come in and get the job done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good illustration, and of course, all of and it brings up to make it clear that this can be used in the office and in work, out on the factory floor, and so on. It, where all our communication goes on. Just briefly, we've been going over the need to be aware how we use pronouns. I messages communicate more clearly what I feel, think, and what ought to be done or how I feel and so on. Whereas you messages tend to be critical and judging, and usually shift the responsibility from me to the other person. So a you message usually accuses. And then we were just discussing we messages, which generalize and also obscure. Now there's a couple other words to pay attention to. Well, let's stay with the pronouns. The word it, we use it a lot, and we use it to sort of distance ourselves from some of our feelings. We may talk about the weather and say it's crummy weather, you know, it's a lousy, well, where part of it is that our feelings, I'm feeling, now if you put I in place of the it, you would be saying, I'm crummy, I'm feeling crummy, you know. Maybe the day is affecting you, but the thing is, your feelings are that I'm not feeling that buoyed up or that energized. So the it sometimes is a way of avoiding our feelings.
And in counseling, when someone will come in and say, it really bugs me, or it, and then you kind of, can you say more about what it is? And then they'll get very specific, but it is a way to keep more generalization.
Yeah. It's a way maybe to complain without being, fully direct. And that could happen in your situation. You're talking about work. They could, it's
doesn't work as well.
Yeah, it's not working.
In work, it usually isn't they, it, it's they.
They.
And, okay, and that's another they. Pronoun. They're and
that's
them.
That's what they want to do, they.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever they are.
Yeah.
They're doing it to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way of distancing ourselves from our feelings and shifting responsibility. Because, you know, it's they that are causing the problems. You know, if management would include us, you know, they're the ones. And of course, the thing is, I suppose in one sense, the lower level has gone along with it. The workers, you know, they could speak up. Hey, I'd like to put some input here. And at least, even if they don't always get heard or you don't get results. Okay, another few words to be alert to, aware of, are always and never. They are absolutes. And when we use those in a sentence, it'll always put the other person on the defensive, or most of the time anyway. Always put them on the defensive. Not always put them on the defensive. But for the most part, we had that little situation about the garbage. Well, if the wife says, you always forget it or you never take it out, that's a total put down. And, you know, say the person has done it some of the time and they don't, you know, they don't feel, hey, you know, at least I've done it most of the time or some of the time, you know. But behind those words, always and never, is our resentment. You'll notice how we usually punch the words, you know. You always, you know, see, you never, you always forget. So the emotions are being expressed through those words. And if we become aware of that, then we could switch to an I message. Say, boy, I'm really upset about this, you know. How can I get a resolution? How can I get this, where we can at least pull together on this? And another word is if. I guess it's if only is really the phrase. If only. It's sort of a complaining. If only you were such and such. And notice the you is in there again. If only you. So those are kind of tip-offs to some that we're getting caught in one of these dysfunctional communication places. Well, that completes it on the words, and next I'd like to look at the awareness wheel. And this is an attempt to indicate that we have a number of functions, processes going on in us, most, you know, all the time, although our attention usually is focused on maybe thinking at some point, or we're more in touch with feelings. But while we're doing the two underneath, we may be wanting something, we may have some intention for an outcome, for a goal. And so that, and the usefulness of the awareness wheel is that when you are trying to resolve a problem, it's important to communicate what you think and also what you're feeling and what your intention is. I would say these three, as far as for more normal day-to-day conversation or problem solving, these here, of course, this hearing is, well, these are both important too, but usually, let's see, Maybe when we're talking, we're already into the doing, and we're could have to do with, I will take action, you know, to do something. And of course, if we sense that we're getting a headache, because there's all the senses here, the feeling, body sensations are included. Usually we don't get into that, it doesn't always get that intense, or but you know, that needs to be communicated too at times, if something's upsetting us, to let the other party know it, about it. But I think if we focus on thinking, feeling, and intention, usually things will run along smooth enough that these three focuses will make it work. Let's see. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Ellie, we could demonstrate.
I was thinking like, we were talking last night, if your intention is to do something, then in order to complete the circle of fullness, then you have to do it. Action would follow. Mm-hmm. So action is pretty important. Intention is nothing if there's no follow through. You can intend to take out the garbage, you can intend to get the job done, but your intention has to be followed by action. I was thinking what we might do is just all sit here and see how much awareness we can bring to ourselves. Because most of the time we're focused out of it. And see what you're thinking, what you're doing. I'm sitting here with my knees crossed. I'm feeling comfortable, kind of, you know. Just look at the wheel and let's just for a moment
sort of
get in touch with yourself.
Okay.
It's one of the processes you go through in order to get centered for meditation, or centered just to begin to function in a tense situation. It's good to center and then turn in on yourself and be aware of all those functions as much as possible, and then just see what you come up with. See what your thoughts are, what you're feeling, what you're thinking. A couple minutes. Okay?
So a Gestalt awareness exercise that way.
Okay.
And you would begin it with an I am thinking, or I am feeling, or I am aware of this or that. I'm aware of my breathing right now, and my right arm resting on this chair. And I'm thinking, I wonder if this is going to work with the group. I'm aware of smiling right now about that, and I see some of you smiling back as I'm aware of the quiet.
What are you hearing?
I'm hearing some children's voices.
Picking up.
Anybody willing to demonstrate this? Well, there is what we call actually a Gestalt awareness exercise, and without even the wheel behind it. And it's an exercise I am just making short sentence, I am aware and I take responsibility for that. A lot of times we don't take full, we project it out, and we may put it out on somebody else, or make them responsible. So I'm aware of taking a big breath and sighing, and I take responsibility for doing that. I'm aware that it felt good,
notice that he said, I take responsibility for that. Another person might sigh and say, if only the kids weren't so bad. That's why I'm sighing.
I'm feeling, since I'm in charge of presenting, I feel some tension with presenting. And when I take a big breath and relax, it feels good.
Okay, do you want to shift and see if someone else would do that exercise? Alice, you want to do that exercise?
Well, you know, I meditate a lot, and I just center with my posture and my breathing, and I was just enjoying it.
Uh-huh. Do you want to just do what he just did, or
well,
bring it right to the present, not what you do out there? What am
I doing? Sort of to report on it. It would be sort of like reporting on your meditation.
My hands.
Yes. Your back away from the chair and sitting out on the edge, and shutting out things by centering on your breathing first, going in.
Notice what she's doing?
Yeah.
What's she doing? She's talking about what you do.
Let her go ahead.
Okay.
I gave a matins up here a week or so ago, and I used this technique of centering. And I work with I do a lot of volunteer work with mental health, and I find that some people like to call it relaxation. You know, others may call it stress, just a negative and a positive term there. But by just shutting out things and coming inward to the moment, and you do that by closing your eyes and not looking out. You may want to go to listen to sounds while you're in there, or you may want to go back to walking the beach, watching the waves come in, or sitting in front of a fireplace and watching the flames flicker. It's a very fine way to shut out problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. That's a good example of meditation and awareness and creating a centered place. And She's using her imagination and her intuition. She's using her ability to fantasize the fireplace or the beach and the feelings that go along with that. She begins to feel, and the breathing is very important. So, and that's very related to what I was trying to lift up here.
That's an interesting thing. You said what I'm trying to lift up here. I've been taught that my teacher, that the word try,
good,
we just should not use.
That's right.
Do it.
One is doing. I am doing now.
Let me demonstrate this. Give me this pencil. Try to give me this pencil.
Okay.
You can't just try.
Well, now you try and take it. Try and take it.
Yeah.
Try. Come on. Keep trying. Keep trying. Try and try. 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 Try.
You keep trying. It doesn't.
It's not a good word.
No. Well. Yeah.
But we do use it a lot.
The word trying comes from. I mean, it's a child that uses the word try.
The
adaptive child, see. Oh yeah, Mommy, I'll try. But he does make a commitment that I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Of course, we adults do that too. You know, we're coming from our someone has asked us, we share these duties, you remember? the garbage and the cleaning the bathroom, we were talking about that. Well, maybe husband is saying, I'll try to do it. And
You don't hear that intention, do you?
Yeah. I will do it. Or if she says, I asked her to take the pencil.
I will take it.
Then she takes it.
Just then, I was interested in the word duty, having, you know, do at the beginning of it in the sound. I just never had quite associated it to right then.
Associated with the will.
Yes.
Duty.
Duty.
Yeah.
We can make duty heavy, whereas it's just factually, you will or you won't do it.
I've become very aware of breaking up words like dis-ease, disease, into dis-ease.
Break down, divide the words. Yeah, this is beware of will action, doing action. You put your willpower into carrying that out, or your commitment, too. Commitment is that level. Now, this is an interesting level, area. What you're wanting and what your intention is. And you know, in a lot of our communication, we usually don't say what our intention is, what we're wanting. You know, we can get into an argument and fight or have a disagreement, and we may try to be trying to work it out. And in the process, though, we don't fully say what we want or what our intention is. Sometimes our intention may be not to agree, you see. Our intention is not to resolve it. I want to avoid the situation, see. And so it's important then to lift up, you know, and ask the other person, now, what are you wanting? Do you want to work this out? And, you know, then if the person quibbles back and forth, you know, they haven't made up their mind about what they want. And then another thing we find that in family or marital counseling, that when things are kind of hot and heavy in terms of conflict, the least threatening is to state what you want. See, if you come on with more feelings, it usually more inflames the situation. If you come on with more thinking, you usually are arguing your position. Whereas if you come with your intention and you want to clear the air, you would say, hey, my intention is to, you know, work it out. My intention is not, you know, is to show some care for you. So that if you put out what your intention is, then that's non-threatening, is basically what I'm saying. If you're coming with a positive intention and you want to calm the waters, your positive intention is non-threatening, and the other person will usually hear that.
Also, usually, no one can argue with that.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Because?
You own it. It is.
You may not get it, but it's okay to want it. I want a perfect marriage. I mean, you can't argue with that. I may not get it, but that's what I want, you know. He can say it's dumb, and he can put it down.
I would rather that you did not use the word perfect. Would you agree to a good marriage?
Well, good isn't good enough.
Well, for me, perfect connotes an abstraction that is unattainable.
Okay, see? So that I have to come down to reality and want something
that's attainable.
I want to marry you. It's so good. The best that can be attained.
Oh, okay. I hear you on that.
Okay.
It brought to my attention a group of words that bothered me. I suppose so, or I guess so. You ask, you know, would you like to do this? Oh, I guess so. Would you like to have this for dinner? Oh, I guess so. They stir me up, and maybe it's because I am looking for a definite yes or no. I really want to please you, and I cannot please you if you come back to me with, well, I suppose so, or I guess so. I want it to matter to you. I guess that's, now that I've said it, I can see where I'm coming from and why. It's because I really want to please you. How can I please you if you don't really care?
If you don't tell me what you want, how can I give it to you?
And the thing that you spend the time doing, I know with me, you know, I spend a lot of time cooking. So you like to be appreciated, I think, for just having the thoughtfulness to go into the meal planning.
Four kids once in a while. Are we having this for dinner again? There's always one that isn't going to like what you've got.
But if I give you a choice, please take it so that I can please you.
Something to lift up there with what you were bringing up.
We both want to please him, and therefore we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. So. The other thing, if you will switch from the you question, so you're at what do you want? And you might experiment anyway with the I message of, I'd like to please you. And I'd like to know what maybe you would like for dinner this evening. So you think about that. You know, and I say, you don't have to have an answer right away. You know, you think about that. But I'd like to please you, or, you know, cook something that you would like this evening. See, there's an I message, and you maybe give him space to, and he might come up with something then. It just hang loose with it. See what he will.
I guess the business, if it really doesn't matter, it shouldn't really matter to me. But maybe what I'm trying to do is getting out of indecision.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to fix, and therefore I'm expecting you to tell me. And I can do it gracefully by getting out by pleasing you.
How about in that, instead of saying I and you, you'd say, well, we want to be satisfied, and opening it up to where both of you are aware of pleasing.
But when you say we want to be satisfied, then you're taking the feeling of the other person, maybe, and you're not owning it yourself. Maybe he doesn't want to, or she doesn't want to. Are you pushing on?
And back to the pleaser here, yeah. Behind your wanting to please is also another message, which you're reluctant to raise up, because it might sound negative. Is, I'm really tired of cooking, and I just, or I'm really tired of doing this, and I'd like some input. You know, behind it is another message.
I suspect that the deep insight into it is that I really want somebody else to make that decision for me. I don't want to today. Mm-hmm. I hadn't realized that, but I suspect that might be true. Mm-hmm.
And then if you can lift that up, that communicates even more, and might evoke more response, because it has a lot of times. My primary feeling would be anger. Cover. And finally Roy caught on, because the way I grew up and couldn't show tender feelings, he would push at me to get to what I was really feeling, and there was always another feeling under there, which might have been sadness. So a lot of times our first reaction covers our what we really feel, and when you tell the person what you really feel, they're likely to hear you. Because it opens it up for them to tell you what they really feel too. See how that might.
Well, that's the risk though that you take in honest communication. Because when you and this is why so many people don't communicate honestly, because you're taking a risk of maybe being rejected by the person.
You are.
And that's scary. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've just been through a massive trauma in exposing my real feelings to the person I was married to. Mm-hmm. And it didn't result in a positive, it resulted in an incredible scenario of destruction.
Mm-hmm. So what are you saying? Sometimes you have to be very...
Well, I'm saying this is why it's so difficult. You have to be prepared to be on a swim.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Because of the risk.
But that's why we are so devious with our feelings. Because to be vulnerable is to be so raw. Because you don't know what you're going to get back.
No, you don't.
The ideal is that the person will love you more. Yeah. Or when you that you're a real person. But as you say, it doesn't always happen.
Do you think, in rethinking it, if did you know fully the intention of the other person? I was thinking that if you're sharing, you know, your more deeper feeling, maybe this, what that person was wanting, and what you're wanting, you know, and what the intentions might be a part of it. It would sound like if that person then used those feelings or attacked you in some way, that somehow that person must have some kind of hidden intention. Is that for that?
Of course.
Yeah.
And that you didn't know about when you dared to risk.
Oh, no, I didn't know about.
Right. Yeah. When you dared to risk, you didn't know. You didn't know him well enough.
I didn't know what was buried in me. Right. And how the exposure of my feelings were going to make me react.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, and that's how... maybe underlines how important intentions are to lift up that area of intention.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah.
Someone like closeness, you know, just kind of involves closeness, intimacy, because we're not all comfortable with closeness. People have various levels of comfort, and if they don't want to be too close, then they can get threatening, angry, you know, and push a person away, and they can push them away by being hurtful.
And I think what she's talking about is you don't know how much permission you have, and with a person you don't know very well, you want to, and I'm not talking about an intimate relationship now, you want to be really careful that you get permission before you ask penetrating questions or give penetrating responses. But we had a response here that I'd like to
hear. Well, I was just thinking about when we got married and after a few years and we looked back at it and said, you know, it's really a risk marrying someone. Because when you think you know someone, and marriage is much more than you've ever experienced in a relationship before that. And plus all, you got to plan on the fact that both of you are going to be making changes if you get married when you're in your 20s. You're not, you know, set or any time in your life. I don't suppose I'll ever be set because I keep changing a little bit. And you have to kind of stay in tune and not be scared of those, but keep talking so that you keep. But we just thought that was remarkable that, you know, marriage is such a deep thing and so many people take it so lightly. And even with us, we thought we knew each other very well, but then even after we were married, we found out new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good illustration of the risk in marriage, which is a moving into this closer realm and, you know, having to live together in a very close relationship. And then that gets scary. There's.
And even here, Karen.
Yes.
What you speak to, even here at Holden, one has to be very careful how much you reveal yourself, and yet you don't want to be covered, and you want relationship, and you want closeness, so you have to be very sensitive to whom you reveal yourself, and how much, right? When you're working in close quarters with one another, or a period of time. And you don't know your backgrounds. You don't know each other's backgrounds and where you come from. So it takes a lot of kind of treading on very easy territory, hard.
Well, but not to have to be too. Well, at least I feel...
Treading carefully.
Okay. I feel you need to have a lot of basic trust too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want. I feel we don't want to let fear run us, because we need to move along with trust, and then have our eyes open, as you know, because we can tell a lot by what we take in when we relate to somebody, and whether they're beginning to get uneasy about what you're, you know, and how comfortable and how kind of so this whole area here of sensing is important. What we hear and see, and what our gut tells us in terms of the relationship, will, and we need to trust them, our intuition, our feelings, and so on, as they guide us in relationship.
I think sometimes when you come across and really tell someone something, many times I've had the experience, I try to really be honest with how things bother me in my work situation. And many times people, just like that, they get angry, but as they think about it, it happened several times, as they think about it, they'll come back and say, well, for example, I have to change appointment with someone. I have to go and say, because of an unforeseen situation, I needed to change this. I'll have to change my meeting with you or so forth. And they'll just like that come across like, I just hate it when that happens. Now, you know, when you explain someone else's situation came in, and later on they'll say, well, I know I jumped at you. If you're honest with how things happen, why this happened, if you're honest and say, I don't like to do this, but I have to do this, and later on, usually if you are honest with, they come back and say, well, I know I shouldn't have jumped at you.
Yeah.
I think I'm going around about it a long way, but
well, if you don't get defensive,
yes,
then they realize they've taken it too personal. But if you get defensive, then it,
yes,
escalate.
Yeah. And I think as honest as you can be is the best way to go with your feelings.
Yeah, right.
The directness
mm-hmm. and clarity and extending trust, I think, evokes trust, and it will evoke directness and clearness from the other person.
We try to.
I was just going to say something I'm thinking about is how it seems like if you keep coming back to the person who, let's say, if you had trusted them and then you were vulnerable and then they didn't receive you well and they rejected you, but if you keep coming back to them, that's the main step you need to take, is not stuff your feelings and, you know, keep it in and then kind of let it fester, let this wall build up.
You're saying to keep it open.
Keep it open, but keep communicating, keep trying to
resolve it.
From it. Instead, just let it go. Mm-hmm. It's asking people to start kind of shaping it and, you know, distorting.
And adding stuff.
Adding things and just making things worse than it was before.
What time do we go to?
Well, I guess we're 11:20. We don't have to go. I have some handouts here that on some of the materials.
Well,
we start.
When's the next class?
We have about 5 minutes or so. Don't we?
10 minutes.
We start at 10:35. Well, I guess we got about 10-15 minutes actually.
Can we go to 11:35?
Yeah. But why don't we pass these around? That has some of the material that we've gone over, and it has the negotiating guidelines at the bottom, and it has a description of dysfunctional and functional communication. So, and then you can pass these around. These are the awareness wheel. This is recycled paper. Whoa. Recycled some of Holden's stationery. And I got one other item. This is just concentrates on the guidelines. It's a little for negotiation, it's a little bit more elaborate. But
And while he's doing that, I'd like to announce that on Friday we're going to have a more demonstration session and no taping. That'll be our
sort of a review and kind of share.
Apply some of these
and
principles,
keep applying
personal it. Situations okay. without yeah. taping it. What else did you want to cover?
Well, that's
got about 10 more minutes.
Yeah. What did you have in mind?
Well, what? How you work with?
That
theory of process.
For today, you mean? Or I think maybe what we might do is look at the guidelines for negotiating an agreement. Because this can apply to work or a friend, a relationship with a friend or whatever. It doesn't just have to apply to family or marriage. And I thought we might maybe demonstrate something, and we might illustrate the awareness wheel in the process and some of the functional or dysfunctional communication. And Ellie, what if we were to do a negotiation?
Okay. And by the way, this is not only for couples, but you can do this with any relationship. In fact, it's important that you do use a process similar to this.
Let's do a dysfunctional negotiation here, mm-hmm. and use pronouns and so forth in a dysfunctional way, mm-hmm. and let's attempt to. What should be the problem, or the thing we're going to discuss?
You never get home in time for dinner.
Get home on time for dinner? Okay. Because maybe we're going to go out that evening to some meeting or something. You want to have dinner early?
No, okay.
Okay, maybe the problem is that she's wanting to have dinner early because there's some activity in the evening that we have to go to. And, okay. Say it's first thing in the morning. And so you're thinking about the day and the evening, and I'm waking up and having my cup of coffee.
You never get home in time for dinner, and tonight it's really important that you get home in time.
Why don't you give me some time to wake up, gee whiz. They're always after me. What's this that you're fussing about now?
I want you to get home in time for dinner. You better get home in time for dinner tonight.
Yeah, well, I'm usually always here.
Well, but you usually aren't, you mean? And it's really important that you get home.
Well, what's so important about it today?
Well, we're going out. We're going to the Browns for bridge.
Since when?
Not yet. Oh, no. See, okay, cut.
Okay, maybe that's it. No, we can start fighting about that. Oh, you've forgotten?
Okay, now, Roy, I know you're not awake yet. This is going to move the function.
Okay.
But are you awake enough to hear my request?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay.
Could you get home 5:30 tonight? Because I'd like to get dinner over early because we're invited out.
Well, let me think. What have I got to do this afternoon then? You want us? I need to be here at 5:30.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Well, let's see, I had some shopping to do. I was going to undo. Well, maybe I could postpone that to the next day. And
okay,
that will. Yeah, I that should be all right.
Okay, thanks.
So.
Sometimes, does it work that way for you sometimes?
What helped was when she said, are you awake enough to talk, you know, that I'd already took account of how I might be feeling at the moment. And even though I was a little bit, who would say, a little on the sleepy side, I still felt alert enough that I could handle this.
But so for your information, Karen, it's taken me a lot of years to know I better be sensitive, that he's not going to be real receptive first thing in the morning. But my pattern might have been more to be more pushing, because I'm wide awake. It's taken a long time to come from that place. To be aware,
well,
to be aware that he's not going to be so alert yet, that I better get his attention. Okay, looks like we need to finish.
Suppose he would have said, I don't think I can, I don't think I'll be home in time.
Yeah, I could,
you'd have
I could accept that.
Yeah.
I could live with that. I could say, well, then we'll probably eat and clear up and leave something for you. We know you've come up with something else. That would be the.
That would
positive.
Be a good example, too.
You
say, I've already committed myself to a certain schedule, and I'm not sure I can make 5:30.
It might upset me, but...
Would you have said then, well, you always come home late?
Well, then that would be then that wouldn't help our relationship. But
well, then you could ask, how soon do you think you can make it? See, then it would...
Pin him down.
Yeah.
So that I would know.
And then I think, well, maybe I could make it by 5:45.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I might ask, well, now what time do we have to be at so and so's place?
Keeping it in the adult.
So we begin, yeah.
Keeping it in our adults rather than getting hooked in, poor me. I have to
make the other person wrong.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
One thing I see here is it's kind of like communication is an ongoing thing. Now, if you had been angry with her the night before, she wasn't as sensitive to you.
Oh.
And then you got up in the morning and then you were asked a question like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she was sensitive then, but like the night before, maybe not, or whatever.
Oh, sure. It doesn't work. It isn't perfect.
You've got to be continually doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A system is
Well, let's say I woke up, like she said, and I was really grouchy in the morning, and something had not worked out so well the evening before.
I'd probably back off. It wouldn't work. I mean, I wouldn't get what I'm wanting then.
Yeah.
And I may call him later in the day. Like,
well, then
right.
I said, I'm not awake. I'm not feeling too sharp right now. You know, and
then I could get mad. Then I could escalate. You know, you're right, of course.
But on the functional side,
that's
then
the way it really works. The way we're demonstrating isn't the way it very often works.
Well. Or you could
more and more.
Yeah, you could be if you saw that I was grouchy, then you could say, well, when might we talk about the supper schedule? You know?
What he's talking about is negotiating for time when it's convenient.
Yeah.
It's like you say to a person, is it okay to talk about this with you? You know, they've maybe mentioned that they've lost a child. That is an example. And I wasn't sure if she wanted to talk more about it. So I said, well, if it's okay, if you'd like to talk about it, I'd really like to hear about it. But you're not sure, then you mm-hmm. test the waters.
One of the things I think we've developed is Judy has a higher awareness level than I do. Maybe naturally, or maybe it's upbringing, but we've learned over the years. We have a real good awareness level, but one of the things we sort of developed, if we feel, sometimes we can tell that we're both concerned about the same thing, or we know because there's something coming up in the family in terms of what's going on, and we're both concentrating. But there'll be a time when one or the other of us have a concern that we're not sure the other one does.
Mm-hmm.
So she will say, usually enough advanced time, she'll say, I think we need to talk about, maybe it's scheduling, maybe it's a decision at church or something with the family. And I said, yeah, I've been thinking about that, but I haven't come to really a conclusion. Let's sit down and chat about it on Saturday morning or something over coffee. Mm-hmm. Or depends on what your time frame is, mm-hmm. but.
That sounds good, and that works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you.
Or at least you get a sounding on, you get a very quick feeling whether the other person is aware that there's
that there's a need. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes she'll look at me and say, why would we think about doing that? Mm-hmm. I think, uh-oh. Back to square one. I'm about two-thirds down on the cycle, and she hasn't hit the top yet. And has,
oh, right. Yeah. And that's what Lisa's talking about. You know, he's not where you are, and then what happens? Well, you just have to keep trying.
Well, I was thinking with that, if you sense that there's something bothering the person, then it would be important to find out what is bothering first before you go on to, like, say, the supper time thing. If the husband were something bothering him, then I think, you know, well, it's, you know, is there something?
Well, yeah, with him, he'll get mad about something 3 days later where I get mad and it's all over. So he'll say, you know, I don't want to do that. And then I'll say, uh-oh, and I'll say, what's the matter? And he says, well, I'm mad at you for 3 days. It's like his emotions don't catch up as fast. So that's another thing that's taken a long time to learn, that he may still have some grudge from something I've completely forgotten, and you're talking about that too.
Well, we have a maybe it's awareness level. I have a very high awareness because I know what's going on almost from the sensing time all the way around when my wife is wherever bothering her. I mean,
you call it intuitive.
It's out in the open, and I'm not that way at all.
She has to guess.
I get a lot of the thinking, but a lot of it goes on under here, so sometimes she doesn't know what's happening.
Unless you tell her. Okay, I think we need to complete.
Yeah,
let me point out.
There is nobody coming in here.
I was interested in the fact that you're wheel up here had an outside word for everything except the thinking, but then you hand out this, and this has some words out here.
Yeah.
Ideas, opinions, fantasy, mm-hmm. intuition, and imagination. Mm-hmm. On data processing.
Yeah, that sort of helps to clarify what might come under those categories. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for your participation.
Yeah.
And we'll see you Friday.